KALW.
Coming up, to what extent does your DNA determine your identity? We follow the story of a woman on a quest to find out more about her ancestors.
I'm a Sudanese who was born in Nubia, who grew up in Saudi Arabia, but I'm not one of the other exclusively.
She wants to know more, so she decides to take a DNA blood test. And those results wouldn't only surprise her, they'd lead her on a path towards a full-blown identity crisis.
The people that I'm trying to be are not seeing me as one, and the people that I am off DNA-wise would never acknowledge me.
Today, a special presentation from KALW News, What's in Your Blood? It's an episode from the Stoop podcast. Stay with us. With more and more people taking DNA tests to find out where they come from and who they come from, today we have an episode of the Stoop podcast, Stories from Across the Black Diaspora, hosted by me and Leela Day. This episode is called What's in Your Blood? We follow Azaz Shami, an East African woman, as she takes a DNA blood test to discover her real ancestry. And Leela and I also take the test. It's the Stoop. Here we go. Hi, Leela.
Hey, Hannah.
How's it going?
It's going good.
What are you doing?
Calling my mom.
Hello?
Mom?
Yes?
I have a question for you.
Yes?
I want to know more about the Native American blood in our family.
All I know is I was told that we were part Delaware Indian. And there's a name for it. There's a specific name for the tribe.
Okay, that's been the story of my life, this kind of vagueness.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Mom, I don't mean to call you vague or anything, honey, but, you know, there's no answer there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always like, ask Uncle Palmer, ask Aunt Betty, ask all these other people.
No straightforward answer.
No one would really have to answer, but I kept asking.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked my whole life.
Why?
I mean, all of us in our family, we all identify as Black. Don't get me wrong. That's not the issue here. I think what frustrates me is not knowing the details behind some of these stories. And then more importantly, something else we don't talk about, which is the idea of wanting to be something other than Black. And for me, I didn't want to be anything else but Black. You know?
I can totally relate to that struggle with family, you know, just where I'm from. Because in Sudan and East Africa and a lot of Africa, actually, you know, there's this striving to claim some other identity, right? Like other than Blackness. And in East Africa, it's been Arab, right? It's been claiming that you're more Arab, that you're more, you know, you have Arab blood. And it's just like that straighter nose, the silkier hair, and people wanting to claim that so badly. So I totally get what you're talking about.
My grandfather was part Indian, Native American, and I have that in our ancestry.
But did you ever see any pictures or do you have, is there anything documented about these Native American relatives?
I don't, but it seems like my aunt did, Betty, Palmer's wife.
Why does this even matter? I keep asking myself that over and over again. Why does it matter?
Yeah. And really, like, does your blood determine your identity, who you are?
Girl, I got me a DNA test.
Leela, you sure you want to do this?
I'm ready. I know who I am.
Let's Stoop this out. In this episode, part of a Stoop mini-series produced especially for Showcase from PRX's Radiotopia.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
Stories from across the Black diaspora
that we need to talk about.
My cousins were water and grease girls, and I couldn't be a water and grease girl.
That's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood.
We be Gullah Geechee United people.
When a Black woman walks up to the desk
in labor. What preconceived notions do you have about her?
I didn't even know we had a hair chart.
So, Leela, I did my DNA test a while ago. You know, I am from Sudan in East Africa.
Yes.
So my results told me pretty much what I already know. I'm from East Africa, some North Africa, some West Africa, some Arabian Peninsula. And nothing was really new to me.
That all sounds very beautiful, actually. I like the sound of that.
Then you like me because that's what that's who I am.
Yeah. So you took the test because
I wanted to see if there were any surprises that I could bring up to my mom and them,
like that you're not
There's like maybe more blackness than they thought. Maybe there's like we're just from like West Africa and South Africa, and there's like no Arab blood or something like that.
So you did the test to find out if you were blacker than you actually are.
Yeah.
Oh, because you wanted to kind of throw it in your family's face. Like,
I wanted to see if we had any surprises in our DNA, you know, because I mean, again, it's not something people talk about a lot, but there is privilege if you are more from the Arabian Peninsula, right, than Africa, than West Africa or South Africa, particularly not North and East.
Right.
That's interesting to bring home. Look, you know, Ghana, Senegal, you know, South Africa. So, Leela, what about you? What about your ancestry? Why are you doing this test? What do you want to know?
Actually, I'm not even sure if I really do want to know. That's why I haven't done the test in so long. You said, you know, it's been around for so long, but honestly, I'm totally fine with just being black. But I do want an answer to this question.
I see the world through the eyes of this village girl who ran barefoot, played with the goats, went to bed by sunset. That was my world.
So this is Azaz
El-Shami.
She's from this small Nubian village way up in the north of Sudan.
And I'm a human rights and gender rights activist.
Azaz's family had this very, very strong sense of Nubian identity. They didn't speak Sudan's official language, Arabic. They were their own people. And they were an ancient people, too.
This insular ethnic group that lived southern of Egypt, north of Sudan for the past 6,000 years. Also, we're kind of marginalized, completely left on our own. Most of the development is done by communities themselves doing it. So we always felt this sense of living in a ghetto.
So they weren't Arabic-speaking Sudanese like you.
Right. So her tribe was an indigenous tribe and never Arabized like other tribes, and that means like when the Arabs invaded centuries ago, they managed to keep their culture, to preserve their language. But then, you know, just like so many Africans that are seeking opportunity, her family moved to the Arab world.
My mom and I joined my dad in Saudi Arabia.
And that's where she grew up. And in Saudi Arabia, she found that there were black people already living there.
Black Saudis.
So where I grew up, there were like second generation of slaves in Saudi Arabia. And there was always this general understanding that slaves are black. It's by definition. Being black, it just makes you a slave.
And those black people faced a lot of discrimination. And Azaz started getting it too.
Yes. Growing up, I had my nickname as Blackie in Arabic. Soda. You know what I mean? And you would hear someone saying, oh, she's cute, but she's too dark. In Saudi Arabia, I'll be walking down the street and this guy would come out of the car in the passenger seat up to his like waist and scream to me the N-word. And I became immune to that.
Goodness. Ugh.
I know. So anybody, you know, who's been to Saudi Arabia knows there's a lot of racism against black Saudis. And just any black people who are coming from other places, you know, like these people who come to work in the country.
And so Azaza's experience with Saudi Arabs as a black woman was, you know, it was really painful. A lot of discrimination, a lot of racism. And some Africans, you know what they do. We've talked about this before. They bleach their skin. They may straighten their hair to look, you know, just to conform and to be more Arab looking. And so they wouldn't get teased, right? But Azaz kind of went in the opposite direction. And like, she was like, I'm going to lean further into my Africanness, my Nubianness. That's what she did.
African queen.
I'm Nubian, period. There's nothing to it. That was my way of protecting my identity. It's like, no, I'm not a slave. And just pushing against this assumption that me being black, that means I was a slave.
Okay, Hannah, so you wanted to do the DNA test to see if you were actually blacker than you are because you thought maybe for some relatives that would surprise them. There'd be some surprises in your family.
Totally. Because of this, like, horrible racial hierarchy that we have in Sudan where having Arab blood, quote unquote, is better. Where, you know, again, we talk about the features, just like whiteness here in America, right? And so when somebody comes back with evidence that, well, your blackness is more than your Arabness, that's spicy. That changes things and it challenges their thinking and their weird hierarchy that's going on. And you're like, the blood don't lie. Here it is. I'm from you. And this is what it is. Blood does not lie. You are blacker than you thought. And what does that mean? And why is that bad? So I wanted all that to happen. which, you know, this was the exact thing that Azaz was fighting against. This idea that
anyone who has more African blood in their genetics, they are less pure, quote unquote. To me, it was really something I couldn't fathom. It's really something I could not understand. It was really ironic to me to see people of other shades of black being biased and being racist towards other people of color, where they all look in the eye of the Arab the same.
So Azaz moves to the U.S. and becomes a human rights and gender rights advocate. And she starts to meet Sudanese people who were just adamant about their, quote unquote, Arab superiority. So she went on a mission
to debunk the idea that we are Arabs or we have purity. And I wanted to prove that we have African blood in our DNA and that we should celebrate this African blood.
So she decided to take a DNA test.
The cheapest one that I could afford at the time, it was DNA Ancestry, and it was the basic one.
And she was really, really public, Leela, about doing this DNA test. Like, everybody around her knew, everybody on her Facebook knew, and like chimed in, like, ooh, I wonder what she's gonna be. Ooh, I wonder what she's gonna find. Like, she wanted to do this in front of the world.
And then I got a message, an email saying that your results are in. And I was excited. 28% African Southeastern Bantu.
Ooh, yeah, uh-huh.
9% North Africa.
We already know that.
3% Senegal, 3% Nigeria, and 1% Mali.
28, 9, 3, 3, what is that? 43%?
Yep, but there's more.
56% Middle East. And when I say Middle East, it was showing me this big lump on Saudi Arabia. I just want to go to bed, and that's what I do when I'm depressed. So to me, it's like I could not understand what that means. And I was like, where is this coming from? And why do I have more than 50% of my DNA from Arab?
So she's like, she's not just Arab. She's from the exact place that she does not want to be. The exact place where she experienced all of the trauma of racism.
I was crushed. I'm telling you, I was crushed.
So
So what happened next? What did she do? What did she try to do?
Well, she felt this urge to prove her Africanness still, even after the DNA test.
And I remember I was like, I was tried so hard and I had my hair curly and I was like started to wear like African prints and all that.
Her African friends were like rolling their eyes because they never really saw her as being fully African.
The people that I'm trying to be are not seeing me as one. And the people that I am off DNA-wise would never acknowledge me.
She really started to ask herself, why does it matter where she comes from?
So how does she identify now?
I'm a Sudanese who was born in Nubia, who grew up in Saudi Arabia, and then had all her experience that was shaped and affected and influenced by all the people that I came across. But I'm not one of the other exclusively. I'm all of them.
So, Leela, why does it matter where we're from?
It does matter. It does matter for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like Ralph Taylor, who discovered that he is 4% Black.
Okay.
Ralph lives in Washington State, and he wanted to get his insurance company designated as a disadvantaged business enterprise, or DBE. These DBEs are these programs that actually everyone should know about.
Mm-hmm.
People of color need to know about these things. They actually allow people of color and women to get certain contracts in retail and construction and things like that. So Ralph was like, I qualify. I'm 4% Black. Okay. I did my DNA test.
I mean, okay, he's 4% Black, but what's the rest of him? What is the rest of his heritage?
So Ralph was 90% European and 6% Indigenous American. But, you know, Mr. Taylor said, and I quote, I'm a certified Black man. Even though he said he's, quote, visibly Caucasian.
Man, I mean, no, uh-uh. We need to soup this out.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for chatting with me.
This is Ralph.
Hi, Ralph. How's it going? It was a little awkward, that conversation with Ralph, especially in the beginning. Yeah, because I was calling him to talk about this lawsuit that he has because he wanted to be part of a program that was set aside for people of color, and he's now suing the U.S. government in order to be able to determine his own ethnicity. And Ralph says he's legit. You said in an interview that you're a certified Black man.
I am, yes.
What's that mean?
That means that I'm recognized as being Black.
You're recognized by the DNA test as being Black.
I'm recognized by the state of Washington and the state of California. My birth certificate says I'm Black, so I'm Black in all 50 states.
Yeah. So what does your family think about all this, that you're suing the government?
My father's from Virginia, Harrisburg, Virginia, and you know, the Deep South. And my father was, to a degree, was racist. And after I took my DNA test, he asked me to take his DNA test. Or let him take a DNA test. And he came back with more, obviously more Black, because that's where it came from. And he thanked me for doing the DNA test because he was able, before he died, he said he was able to let go of a lot of stuff that he never liked about himself. But he couldn't get past it just because of the culture.
Do you think that you look Black? When you look in the mirror, do you see that mixed heritage, or what do you see?
I see myself, and I acknowledge myself as being a person of mixed heritage.
Uh-huh. What made you want to sue the government about this?
It's a principle issue more than anything else.
There's people that are going to say Ralph Taylor's trying to take an advantage and get some of these benefits that should be going to people who are disenfranchised Americans that need these benefits. What do you say to people that would say that about what you're doing?
I was just as disenfranchised to begin with. I mean, like I said, I slipped out of my car. So who are they to say that I'm not disenfranchised? Who are they to cast judgment on me?
What? Oh, this is really complicated. So
Ralph changes his birth certificate, and he initially said he wanted to be black for financial benefit. But then Leela, I still don't hear, like, what's the cultural connection here? There's no cultural connection. It feels like it's all for just, like, for money, essentially, for financial benefit.
I get to identify any way I want, and that's the fight that I'm in. But, you know, if I get to identify myself, then
you do, but I'm not sure, like you can, but I don't, but I cannot. So that's the difference. No, I can't go in because that's, I don't walk through the world as a white person.
Well, you can go and get your documentation changed. You can put on an application, anything you want.
I mean, we could do a whole show about this scenario, but for Ralph, it just sounds like he's more concerned about his right to make these choices, not really a cultural connection. And that's what we're talking about here, like that connection to culture.
You know, I started wondering, Anna, what if I do this DNA test and I find out I'm only 4% black?
You're black.
I've been told my whole life, this is why I'm doing this test, though. I've been told my whole life that I have this Native American blood.
Okay, you're light.
Yeah, a little.
Uh-huh.
But this narrative is so ingrained in our family's identity. Mm-hmm. On both sides of my family, my father's side and my mother's side, you know, there was a picture of someone who had straight hair or a thinner nose. It was like, oh, that's because we have Cherokee in our blood. Or, mm-hmm. oh, you know, they had those high cheekbones. So that's because, you know, we have a Chickasaw in our blood. But no one could tell us exactly. The averages are that African Americans generally have about 0.8% American Indian blood.
0.8.
And we're talking about, in this episode, American Indian, because, you know, it's something, like we've been saying, something we've been needing to find out.
Yeah.
And something that I've been wanting to find out, Hannah, and I got the results.
Whew.
I got the results right here.
Are you ready? Look at me.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah. Leela Day, DNA. 30% Great Britain. 26% Togo. Hey. 14% Mali. Cameroon, Congo, and Southern Bantu peoples is 27%. The other regions look Native American. Here it is. 1%.
1%.
1%.
What does that mean?
It makes me a little sad, but only sad because it's like, I really do feel that the intention of the family was to connect to another group of people that might have had the same sort of experience of oppression in this country, or a similar feeling of oppression, of not being seen as whole. Bantu people, that's kind of nice to know.
Mali?
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to digest this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What does this 1% do for you?
The 1% feels the same as the other percentages, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I don't really have a connection at any of these, really. Cameroon, Congo. I'm getting a little emotional.
Yeah. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
That's where you're from, Leela.
Oh, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just part of, like, you know, it's just this history of our country of wanting to connect to something. So, feels good. I didn't realize this would be, like, an emotional episode. Now I get it.
What is it?
It's just knowing you come from somewhere, you know? I mean, people won't think about that. Like, there's a huge population in this country that just doesn't, they don't know where they came from. But they know how they feel. So, you know, actually, I feel like I've had, like, some resentment towards family members who have, like, been claiming the Native American thing for so long, because I've just been like, just claim your blackness and be proud of it. But this makes me think, like, just claim it all, you know? claim what you feel is right. Because even seeing all this, you know, and all these countries listed here, I can travel to all these countries and I could still not feel a connection to it, you know?
But you're from them all.
Yeah. It's a lot of places. It's a lot of places to be from.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, girl, is that the stoop?
So, Leela.
Yeah.
Does it matter to know where you come from?
Judging from my response to this, yes. You're lucky.
That's what it is.
You've known.
And now you do. Yeah. Welcome to the club.
Yep.
Oh, Leela. Oh, goodness,
crack in these episodes.
I didn't know I was going to cry.
Congratulations. Mwah. Oh, I'm so happy for you.
You've been listening to a KELW News special presentation of The Stoop podcast. Thanks to editor Julie Kane, assistant producer Jessica Jupiter, engineer Seth Samuel, music by Daoud Anthony. Support for The Stoop comes from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Find them at calhum.org. Special thanks to the NPR Story Lab. And our cross-currents team today includes engineers James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben, content manager Shireen Hadil. Our news director is Ben Trefney. Find more episodes of The Stoop at thestoop.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. For KELW News, I'm Hannah Baba.